Clothing brands should pay a penny per garment to fund better clothing waste collection in the era of fast fashion. UK lawmakers said Tuesday an eight-month inquiry and the first of its kind revealed around 300,000 tonnes of textile waste are sent to landfill or incinerators in the UK every year. As retailers increase their number of annual collections and offer low prices, shopping has become big business.
Better than expected fourth quarter results at Walmart are easing concerns the U.S. consumer isn't in a shopping mood. America's largest retailer on Tuesday said sales were strong during the holiday season and, quote, "we still feel pretty good about the consumer." All this optimism is in stark contrast to recent worries sparked by a government report last week that showed the biggest drop in monthly retail sales in 9 years. Walmart sales jumped to nearly $139 billion over the three-month period as investment in its online operations pays off.
Manny Machado, baseball's 26-year-old superstar infielder, will sign a contract with the San Diego Padres that will pay him $300 million over the next 10 years, media reports. If confirmed, it would be the most lucrative free agent contract in the history of American sports, according to MLB.com.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Wednesday. It's February 20th, and it's 5:09 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in again for another edition of The Opening Bell, and we've got another business day getting underway here. Lots going on in the world today, especially in the world of business. One of them involves changes in Illinois to banking, insurance, and utilities, and some of it involves ComEd. Steve Daniels will be here this morning from Cranes to talk a little bit about that with us. He'll be up momentarily. A little bit later in the program, Dr. Kaveh Savavi is going to be here. Millennials, young people, especially, driving the future of healthcare with their choices now. And the clue is that not a lot of them are very happy with what's going on in healthcare. And that could impact all of us moving forward as new health policy is unveiled and proposed. We'll talk about that at about 5:40 this morning here on The Opening Bell, so stay tuned for that. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures in the United States are pointing toward mixed open, with Dow futures off just a fraction. S&P futures are off just a fraction as well. NASDAQ futures are pointing up, but only by a fraction as well. As we look around the world this morning, markets in Europe are in the green by just fractions as well, with the FTSE, the DAX, and the CAC all up but less than a quarter of a percent. And in Asia, markets are in the green. The Nikkei is going to finish the day up nearly a half a percent, or 128 points. The Hang Seng, 285, higher nearly a percent. The Shanghai is up just about a quarter of a percent. And oil is trading at $55.97 a barrel, which is down about 12 cents. The opening bell will ring today after stocks closed higher on Wall Street to begin a short trading week. Yesterday, after erasing earlier losses, yesterday the Dow gained about 8 points. The NASDAQ was up just 14 points. The S&P was up about 4 points. A couple of headlines. Americans expect to spend more in 2019. The New York Federal Reserve says consumers expect to spend more on clothing, housing, and transportation than they did last year. Data from the latest survey of consumer expectations shows households expect to shell out a half a percent more to cover the basics this year. Elon Musk is dialing back his forecast for Tesla in 2019. The CEO tweeted yesterday that the company will make around 500,000 electric cars in 2019. His claim was met with skepticism, prompting him to later say that the annual production rate will probably be at about 500,000 by the year's end. Musk anticipates deliveries will still be about 400,000. And oil prices are running near high levels, so near the highest level so far this year, lifted by OPEC supply cuts and U.S. sanctions on exports from Iran and Venezuela. We mentioned that the oil is a little higher this morning. The international benchmark is up about 13 cents to $66.58 a barrel, in the U.S. at $55.97 a barrel. Let's begin this morning with ComEd. It's Smart Grid. There are questions still remaining about what it is and what it is moving forward and how it's been set up. It appears to be done, but we still don't know a whole lot about it. Steve Daniels is with us this morning from Crain's Chicago Business. Steve, what is the headline here, and what should the immediate takeaway to consumers be?
Well, the headline in this story was based on an investor presentation that ComEd's parent made just a week or so ago, in which it was outlining the spending plans for ComEd in terms of investing in infrastructure and upkeep and whatnot, capital spending. And those levels of spending that are planned at ComEd over the next 4 years are actually higher than what it's been doing during the what really was almost an unprecedented level of spending that was authorized in the Smart Grid project. And that project is largely completed. So it raised all kinds of questions about what exactly needed to be done now that they'd finished what was a landmark infrastructure program. They didn't have a lot of answers for that, but the one thing that we do know is that when at utilities, when you spend outsized amounts, the rates that people pay go up by substantial amounts. That much we always know. So it raised a lot of questions about why ComEd was spending at these levels now that it was completed, and whether it was simply just to goose the earnings at its parent company, which is also in its investor presentation. So that's the basic gist of this.
Yeah, and see, the ComEd has said that some of the things they're spending money on it includes the cybersecurity for the grid. That's always something that gets people's attention when they talk about that, and also communication networks. How much of that is real? How much of it is not?
I don't know. And they're not saying a lot about that. Now, obviously, cybersecurity is a hot topic with the electric grid. There have been reports about real weakness in the, not just at ComEd, but throughout the nation in terms of the power grid and the ability to hack it. And, if somebody who meant us harm were able to put the lights out through large swaths of the country, that would obviously be a major problem. So, there's no question that that's a real issue that probably does require some investment. But again, that's only a component of this. We just don't know, and they're really not saying a lot at this point. But what they are asking for is in legislation that they just filed in Springfield is a 10-year extension of their ability to recover these investments quickly in rate hikes, basically automatic rate hikes that take place per a formula, and that they want a 10-year extension of that authority, which currently expires in 2022. So again, that authority was given to them in 2011 on the basis of some very specific investment plans. They want an extension of that authority based on some very unspecific spending plans now.
And if I recall, that bill went into effect in 2011 with the veto of the governor at the time, Pat Quinn.
Correct. Yes, it did, and it was a heavy political lift for ComEd to get that done at the time. Nobody ever bets against them in Springfield, and they ultimately prevailed. In large part, those investments that were authorized at the time, at least the early returns on those appear promising. We have seen better reliability from ComEd in terms of number of outages and how long it takes them to turn the lights back on when they do go out. It hasn't maybe been tested quite as much as we might have expected in terms of some really bad storms and the like that tend to create mass outages. But nonetheless, credit where credit is due, it does appear that most of those investments seem to have been cost-effective, seem to have worked out in terms of what was promised. The question is, why you would think we would be hitting pause on the rate hikes now that it's done, but not at all. So that's the issue now.
Right, and they are facing a new governor now, different people in Springfield. But again, as you mentioned, don't bet against them at the Capitol, right?
Exactly, and many of the same people are still there in Springfield, most notably the Speaker Mike Madigan, who is the one who is actually an expert on utility issues, unlike most of the people, lawmakers down there, and I don't blame them for not being that. So he'll be the arbiter of a lot of this, I'm sure. If they don't, the big question is whether there's going to be a big energy bill down there this year or not. I would bet against that. So not sure this is going to get taken up this session, but it will be taken up. If it's not this session, it'll be next session or in the fall veto session.
Steve, I'm curious from a consumer standpoint. Watching our bills closely, when will we see something fishy? I know we've seen these 6% generally increases over recent years. Is that what we should look for, and anything more than that we should be concerned?
Yeah, the 6%, there's two components of the electric bill. One is the cost of getting the power to your home, and the other is just the cost of the power itself. And this, we're talking about the cost of power getting it to your home. That's what's risen 6% on average over the past several years. It will continue to probably rise at about those levels. You haven't noticed it because the cost of the power itself has fallen in that period of time. But that also is on the upswing. So if this all goes through, I would imagine that people will start to notice increases over in their overall bills, which is after all what they care about. And one of the things the utilities have been very careful about in recent years, and one of the reasons they have pushed capital spending as hard as they have, is that the perception that it wouldn't really be noticed by consumers, since the price of electricity itself has been cheap by historic standards over this period of time. This appears to me like they're maybe pushing things a little bit to the point where people will notice, and always there's the risk that energy prices will go up, and then you got real affordability problems if that's the case. So, you know, it's definitely bears watching.
What is the role of the Illinois Commerce Commission in all of this? Have they been involved? To what extent do they have teeth left to perhaps fight some of this?
They have some authority to do that, but that's the whole idea of formula rates, is that it takes away most of their flexibility. So what they can, the only thing they can really do is say or challenge what the utility is spending money on. Once the decision is, sure, go ahead, or it's not even before the fact in a lot of cases, it's just simply after the fact, you shouldn't have spent money on that. The regulators have been very loath, and these regulators in particular have been very loath to challenge those sorts of things. And after that, it's just a formula. So this is a very rare authority for electric utilities to have in the U.S. Most states do not allow utilities to recover their investments per an annual formula. They have to come in and do a fully litigated rate hike. That's a 11-month process in Illinois. It's kind of onerous, and it doesn't happen every year. So this is a very valuable power that ComEd has which it wants to extend for 10 years. So that's a lot of the issue here. The formula was supposed to allow for the smart grid investment to occur. It's done. So why are we pushing to extend the formula? What's the purpose? That's a big question.
Yeah, and when the ICC has tried to put stuff forward, I know they've been taken to court by I'm guessing ComEd is involved in that, or I'm sure they are. They were involved in that. So there's the threat of legal action ongoing, isn't there?
Well, yeah, there's that. Or more to the point, when Pat Quinn's ICC was a much more consumer-friendly ICC than Bruce Rauner's ICC is, I guess, probably not a shock. And that ICC did push back on some of ComEd's early plans on the smart grid, or in terms of how it interpreted the law. What ComEd did in that case was it just went back to the legislature and said, they're not doing what we want. And the legislature has always been, or at least in recent years, been very friendly to ComEd, passed yet another law that told the ICC, you're not interpreting this correct way, to make sure that ComEd got all the money that it thought was coming to it. So that's usually the game plan when the commission doesn't do what ComEd wants.
Steve, thank you for being with us this morning. This is good stuff, and turn up the thermostat. Stay warm these days with the cold weather continuing.
Yep, absolutely.
All right, thank you very much. Steve Daniels from Crane's Chicago Business, the banking insurance utility senior reporter at Crane's. We're going to link out to his story a little bit later this morning. You can find more at chicagobusiness.com.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Wednesday edition of The Opening Bell. Younger consumers say they are dissatisfied or very dissatisfied with traditional health care, and that could drive the future of health care for every one of us consumers moving forward. Now a checkup on the latest healthcare research. We're joined by Dr. Kaveh Safavi, who is Managing Director, Senior Managing Director, and Head of Global Health Practice at Accenture. The Accenture 2019 Digital Health Consumer Survey is out. Doctor, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve. Good to be here.
Did I hit the headline right on that? I've been looking through the consumer survey, and that seems to be one of the headlines, is that younger consumers are not happy, and they want something different.
You did. It's a reflection of the fact that Americans' expectations are being formed about how healthcare should be based on their perceptions and experiences that go on outside of healthcare. And you really see this very strongly as you look at younger generations.
What is it specifically? Is it a different doctor experience, doctor-patient experience? Is it affordability? Is it technology and convenience, or all of the above?
Well, what we found were a few things. First, it's really interesting. If you look at the millennial generation, which now represents the largest living generation just in numbers, they overtake baby boomers in terms of raw numbers, they are dissatisfied with traditional in-person care compared to baby boomers by almost 2-1, showing a preference for things like convenience, technology, retail experiences, etc. In fact, we tested for a number of things that we would call digital parts of healthcare when you choose a doctor, like can you book an appointment, can you order your medication refills, can you have a video conversation, and what we found was that as you get to younger groups, they expect that even more and more. Although even in the older groups, even in the seniors, you find as much as a third of seniors describing a preference for these kinds of capabilities. What was really interesting to us, however, was that this isn't just about the very young. The group between the ages of, say, the mid-50s and mid-70s, also known as the baby boomers, the Gen Xers, which are between the mid-30s and mid-50s, they demonstrate a preference that's much more like their children than their kids. So all the way until the mid-50s, you're seeing a real strong preference for digital kinds of experiences when they interact with the healthcare system. So this isn't just about young people who haven't had healthcare. This is about people who are already now having healthcare, expecting more from the healthcare system than the way that they are seeing it right now.
You know, one of the things that jumped out of the this research at me was that the millennials and Gen Z specifically, they say they don't necessarily have a primary care physician like some of the other generations. And I immediately thought, well, maybe that's why they don't like their primary care physician experience. But when you figure in the Gen Xers there, then that's when you see the trends, right?
Right. And when you look, we actually ask them if they have a doctor or if they want a primary care doctor. And actually, if you add the sums of those who have and those who want, they're actually pretty similar across generations. So on the one hand, all of the generations express a desire to have a personal physician. However, at the same time, they're expressing a desire to have digital interactions in addition to having a personal relationship. And that was part of what we were going for here, is we were really looking for preferences for alternatives. And it's less about an either-or or moving from one to another. It's more about an expansive notion of their preferences for healthcare. In fact, if you look at the data between 2016 and 2019, across a variety of different kinds of digital options for all Americans, we saw in 2016 about half of Americans expressing preferences for different kinds of digital access. And by 2019, that had moved to close to three-quarters of the population expressing it. So this is a broad-brush expansion, and it's not in place of, it's in addition to the personal relationship.
Again, we're talking about the Accenture 2019 Digital Health Consumer Survey. I'm struck also by all of the generations that were surveyed are open to non-traditional health care. So what are we talking about there, and what were the survey results?
Yep. We were actually looking at settings, and so if you look across, about half of the population has sought care at least once in the last year from a place other than what they would describe as their usual or personal place of care. So think about maybe going to a retail clinic or an urgent care, someplace other than where you would normally go for care. And somewhere between 20 and 30% actually chose a digital channel instead of a physical channel for that alternate setting. So this is, again, demonstrating that people are looking for choices and options. I describe it as people looking for care on their own terms, where and when they want it. And for that, they would be open to any number of different avenues for specific kinds of care.
And the digital part of this is important not only for the actual health experience, but consumers say they want it to be easier to find their provider, find a provider, or find the care that they're delivering, and whether that's searching on a digital app or some other sort of digital platform, that seems to be a big deal, too, as we look at some of these data points.
It is. In fact, one of the interesting things is that there's this common belief that how people find doctors is they go based on the recommendation of a friend or family member. We actually looked at things that would influence choice, and we found, for example, that all consumers are three times more likely to be influenced by convenience than they are by a friend's recommendation when making an initial choice as to who a provider would be. So these concepts are so important that they're actually rising to the top in terms of a driver for where you're going to seek your medical care. And I think all of these things combine to really ask the medical system, the healthcare system, to begin responding to what citizens want. If we want to really meet citizens on their own terms and, in fact, demonstrate that citizens are getting their money's worth from the money they spend in the healthcare system, which is an increasing source of frustration for all citizens.
Yeah, and that's one of the other survey points I wanted to ask you about is the transparency about cost. The people, at least from the survey, say they want to know exactly what the cost is going to be, whether it's covered by their insurance. They want all of that conversation. That's not always been the case when you go to the doctor.
Yeah, this is really an important point you're seeing, which is that cost has always been a driver when people have looked at why a person might choose a place to go. Out-of-pocket cost has always been one of the top drivers in the United States, but the issue of transparency is really important because we're seeing more and more that people expect to know that number, and it's not because they might choose differently. In fact, we've done other research that shows that people may not switch providers based on the cost information, but they absolutely want to know in order to at least plan for that expense. And so oftentimes what you've heard is, well, it doesn't really matter because they're not really making the choice of where to go based on cost. And even if that's true, it's a source of dissatisfaction if they don't know what it's going to cost them because they can't plan. That's a really important factor in terms of building trust, is transparency as a driver of trust.
You mentioned the walk-in clinics, for anybody who thought this was a flash in the pan, the results of the survey here show just the opposite, that these clinics are really in the mainstream now and serving a major purpose when it comes to the healthcare of the nation.
Absolutely. For certain kinds of care. Americans are pretty smart when it comes to deciding where the right place to go is for care. And in fact, we've known that from forever. I mean, as a child, even if you called your doctor, they'd say, if you're really sick, go to the emergency room. So that's not new. The reality is that patients understand that there are certain conditions that can be treated reasonably well in any kind of a setting, and they go seek that kind of care. If you look across the data, you see, for example, minor illnesses like colds or minor illnesses that might be sprains or cuts. They recognize that those can be treated quite well in these kind of locations, and so that's what they seek out when they want care for those conditions, is care right now wherever I am and on my own terms.
How important is it for healthcare providers and payers to pay attention to this data moving forward, especially when you talk about a younger generation that values loyalty and also, you know, they want to have upfront information and that transparency. Those providers and payers that follow this, will they survive the healthcare industry going forward?
Critical. We've done other research that looks at why people switch, for example, health insurers or doctors, and what we find is that for the younger cohorts, they will switch based on the service experience, for example, whereas the older groups may switch more based on cost, the younger groups will switch based on service, not cost. So from a preference perspective and from a loyalty perspective, if the healthcare system doesn't respond, they're going to realize that the people that they treat have choices and they're not as loyal as they think, and that is going to be a challenge for them in terms of a sustainable business.
Dr. Savavi, thank you for being with us this morning. This is good information. We're going to share it with our listening audience this morning, and we appreciate you joining us this morning.
Thanks, Steve. Good to be here.
Dr. Kaveh Safavi, the Senior Managing Director and Head of Global Health Practice at Accenture. It's the Accenture 2019 Digital Health Consumer Survey.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward a flat open to negative open on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures are off about 35 points this morning. NASDAQ and S&P futures are lower by a fraction each. Now, commodities and agriculture. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. It may have been a fairly quiet day from the standpoint of price movement on Wall Street yesterday, but it was a daily limit move day at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. In the hog market, lean hog futures fell the daily limit of $3 a hundredweight, and that means today the exchange will expand the daily limit to $4.50 a hundredweight. Rich Nelson of Allendale in McHenry said heavy snows in all of hog country today and tonight will further back up marketings and push back the date when we get supply returning to normal. Cattle prices yesterday, live cattle and feeder cattle did find a little bit of support. The February live cattle contract up $1.25 a hundredweight. March feeder cattle gained $1.15 a hundredweight. Meanwhile, not as big a move in the grain market yesterday, although wheat was the story of the day. Most wheat futures contracts, included most actively traded May, fell to new contract lows yesterday, and March soft red winter wheat at the Board of Trade down 14.5 cents a bushel in yesterday's trade. Coming up tomorrow and Friday in Washington, D.C., it's the USDA Agriculture Outlook Forum. And tomorrow, Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue will host a trade discussion with the Canadian and Mexican Ministers of Agriculture. I'm sure the topic will be NAFTA number 2. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You too. A couple of stories before we leave you this morning. Samsung expected to show off its latest smartphones today as the entire industry struggles to come up with new features compelling enough to end a slump in sales. The models being unveiled in San Francisco will commemorate the 10th anniversary of Samsung's first smartphone. Samsung also expected to provide a glimpse at a highly anticipated smartphone with a foldable screen. Governor Gavin Newsom in California promising a fight after the Trump administration said it plans to cancel nearly $1 billion awarded to the state's high-speed rail project, wants California to return an additional $2.5 billion already spent. Newsom says the Trump administration's move is clear political retribution. California is suing the administration over President Trump's emergency declaration to pay for the border wall. And the folks at H&R Block knew you'd be upset with the tax law this year. There's a report that the H&R Block tax repairers actually took the empathy training to handle people upset by smaller tax refunds or surprise tax bill. The report by MarketWatch says that some of those people working on your tax returns went through 30 hours of training ahead of the tax season, and some of that included a special empathy training, which included a refund surprise training module to coach their responses to clients shocked or upset by lower tax refunds or a surprise tax bill in the wake of the new tax law. Many people are complaining online and in social media about not getting a refund this year, or having to pay taxes, or not getting the kind of refund that they normally get. Now, the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for the 20th of February, 2019. The weekly look at mortgage applications leads off a short lineup of economic reports today. Applications have been trending down the past month and have been running behind levels of a year ago. Mortgage applications are due mid-morning. The Federal Open Market Committee will release minutes of its last meeting this afternoon. The Fed's policymaking arm held off on changing interest rates at its meeting last month. Also on the schedule today, the Mortgage Bankers Association with those mortgage prices, also farm prices, a report later, and e-commerce retail sales due out as well. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Wednesday, February the 20th.